in front of B.B. King, and B.B. actually came to the side of the stage to listen to Terry Garland. He was that impressed with the talent of that one single solo player.
That's amazing. That's great. And that's something that's very important to realize is the opportunities that come, you know, when you have a successful venue and you're bringing people in from afar and near to listen. What do you think are some of the sources of that? Were you involved a lot with the VCU's jazz program or what particular variables do you think came into play as far as producing some of the better musicians locally?
Well, honestly, local musicians don't command the kind of fees that the national and the international musicians command, so we could do some shows that were a little bit more affordable to audiences. We could bring three or four groups into the room in a night, and if each band had 200 or 300 fans, you could fill the Carpenter Center pretty easily with that kind of thing. We did a Virginia Roots night once, which was old-time Virginia music. Mark Campbell was one of the stars of that show. Fabulous gospel a cappella choir, the Peschall Brothers, mm-hmm. who are just recently recorded by John Lohman at the Humanities Council in Charlottesville, who'll be coming to the National Folk Festival next October, as a matter of fact. Local musicians should be treated with the same respect as the national or the international artists. It's just unfortunate that the numbers necessary to balance the budget sometimes weren't there.
What, and I know this, I want to try to move things along. I know this is, this is all great stuff. Your involvement with the Richmond Symphony, the Richmond Concert Band. How about those type of people who are playing, you know, night after night with the schedules? What can you say about those groups?
Well, the Richmond Symphony is a fabulous young orchestra. Most people don't realize that virtually all of those folks have to have day jobs because they are part-time musicians. They work during the day. They rehearse at night. They rehearse on the weekends. Many of them travel 150 miles to come in to work with the symphony. And in spite of all of that, they make some pretty wonderful music. But like all symphonies in America, they struggle financially. Symphony audiences are getting old and tired and graying. The donors to the orchestras are dying off, and their children aren't necessarily as interested in orchestral music as their parents might be. So it's a real shame. Now, the Richmond Symphony has made some really interesting attempts to draw new audiences. Last weekend, they did music from Lord of the Rings.
Right.
I believe they had the largest crowd in the 10 years I've been to town.
And that's
everybody
good news.
I saw afterward who was at the concert, said this is the kind of thing that'll bring new people to listen to the symphony orchestra. And you give them a little Brahms and Bartok on the side, but you got to give folks something they're familiar with and, frankly, something that's fun.
Yeah.
And Lord of the Rings certainly did that for the symphony.
The symphony certainly, it seems like to me, has tried a lot of great things with laid back classics or?
Kickback classics.
Thank you.
Kickback. You know, you could come to kickback classics. You could have a beer, a slice of pizza, bring your kids. It was cheap. And then they got tossed out of the Tredegar facility, and now they're doing it in a pavilion over by the Science Museum. Those are the kinds of things that are necessary to develop the listeners of the future. Make it easy for them. Make it fun.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit. We talked about a lot of the past highlights and opportunities, and we talked about some of the great potential and some of the challenges. Dun dun dun. I think we better get along and talk about the controversy coming up with the Virginia Performing Arts Foundation. And I was hoping maybe you could give a little bit of history. I know there's a lot of history, and it's hard for a lot of people to understand, but maybe you could give it your perspective of it.
Well, it's a long history. Some of it to be proud of, some of it breaks my heart. The Carpenter Center board in the early 90s had the forethought to begin to think strategically about their future. And they developed a strategic plan which said, A, Carpenter Center is kind of old and dodgy and needs improvement. We need to raise some money to make improvements to it. B, the neighborhood is dead. the Carpenter Center was between, still is between, two vacant department stores, long vacant shops all up and down Gray Street. And the board wanted to find a way to participate in the redevelopment of the neighborhood. And like so many other cities before Richmond, cultural facilities can help to bring back a downtown area. They generate people. They generate visits to restaurants. They generate after-concert activity. And you name a city, and I probably can think of a museum or a concert hall or some other cultural program that's helped reinvent their downtown. So the Carpenter Center Board wanted to be part of that, and one of the reasons I was attracted to the job was they wanted to be at the table with their strategic plan and move forward with the rest of the community. The plan was, as all are, were revised and tinkered with over the years. But about 4 years ago, we raised about $5 million. We bought the Tallheimer's building, and then held it in hopes of raising even more money so we could knock down the Tallheimer's building potentially and improve the Carpenter Center stage and the lobbies. About the same time, we were also talking with Richmond Renaissance and the Arts Council and Theater of Virginia. Some of your listeners may not know that there was a Theater of Virginia, a Lort dramatic theater, who needed a home. And we all got together and said, well, we need to form some kind of fundraising organization because the Carpenter Center is an operating company and we need somebody who's going to be in charge of really raising a lot of money with a big vision that would raise big dollars. And this performing arts task force, which was born under Richmond Renaissance, eventually became the Virginia Performing Arts Foundation. And one of the board members, Brad Armstrong, was convinced to leave his high-paying job at the Martin Agency to lead this Performing Arts Foundation. And we had hoped that there would be a very strong partnership between our board and that board, and my expertise would be used to help train Mr. Armstrong, who is an advertising man, not an arts impresario. And there was some fundraising success, and a master plan was developed that called for over $150 million worth of improvements to the Carpenter Center, the National, the Empire, the Landmark.
These are all old theaters all around downtown.
All old theaters, wide-ranging, called for the construction of a 600-seat theater for Theater Virginia right next to the Carpenter Center, where the Tallheimer's department store used to stand. And then Theater Virginia went out of business. And there was a lot of scrambling going around, and the plan then was changed to develop a 1,000-seat music hall, which could be the home of the Richmond Symphony. It's a very controversial piece, because across the street from the Carpenter Center at 7th and Broad is the National Theater, also a 1,000-seat venue. So for some of us in the business, it didn't make any sense to build a 1,000-seat venue, new venue, right across the street from a 1,000-seat existing venue that needed renovation, but nonetheless far more cost-efficient to renovate an old building than it is to build a new one.
A historic one.
And a historic one at that. Yeah. So there was a lot of pushing and pulling over the last couple of years. Over that, decision was made that the symphony had lots of wealthy donors, and the opportunity for the symphony and the Performing Arts Foundation to cooperate to raise money to build a music hall was a good idea. I objected from day one because cultural facilities need two things. Well, they need a lot of things, but they need one, they need a feasibility study that says the philanthropic community will support the idea. Two, they need a feasibility study that says the venue will work as a business, how much money can come in, how much use can come in, et cetera. And the third thing that they need is they need major tenants who are going to do public events there on a regular basis. Unfortunately, this proposed music hall has none of the three. There's never been a feasibility study done on fundraising or operations. The symphony donors are very concerned about keeping the symphony alive, so they haven't lined up to donate to this music hall. And as we got further into the planning, we discovered that a 1,000-seat theater with